across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan
Show! Good morning and welcome to this podcast from the BBC. So, Commonwealth Games NI, they essentially doubled down. You remember yesterday's programme where the likes of Gavin Robinson, who was speaking to Gamu, described some of the chief exec of Commonwealth Games NI's comments as appalling, told him to butt out of politics, stay with sport. Dan Dodds was then on the Nolan Show saying something similar. Well, Commonwealth Games NI had a meeting last night. They've issued another statement, doubling down. Essentially saying to the executive, our position is there should be a new Ulster banner, and by the way, the decision around it needs to be made a few months before Glasgow. So all kicked off on the programme yet again over that, and it's on this podcast from The Nolan Show and the BBC. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning. The DUP squared up to the chief executive of the Commonwealth Games NI yesterday when their leader, Gavin Robinson, on Good Morning Ulster, told him, Conal Heatley, to butt out of politics. Mr. Heatley had called for the executive to design and implement a new banner, a new flag for sport in Northern Ireland for the Commonwealth Games. In Northern Ireland, to be precise. Conal Heatley is the chief executive of the organisation. Diane Dodds was then on Nolan yesterday, and she was telling Mr. Heatley also to butt out of this and concentrate on sport. Now, the development today is the Commonwealth Games NI have doubled down. They have not only remained with the view and express this now publicly yet again, that the executive should design a new banner. They've actually set a deadline on it. There was no deadline yesterday. There now is today. And Mr. Heatley and the Commonwealth Games NI are saying that the executive ought to get on and design this and have it in place, the decision made a few months before the Commonwealth Games begin in Glasgow. So there's now a deadline as well. We're getting political reaction to this, and we can already see you calling us about this. 03030 80 55 55. The leader of the TUV, Jim Allister, with us this morning. Morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
So Commonwealth Games NI not only doubling down, they've now got a deadline for the executive to make this decision.
I think they're just digging themselves into further disrepute, because far from being the those who promote sport, they are now into the politics of all this. And I think that's a very foolish step for them to take. But there is a very serious issue in terms
of... they're representing people that will be engaging in sport in Northern Ireland, and from their point of view, making sport as inclusive as possible. What's wrong with that?
Well, they're representing some people by wishing to exclude the affinity of those who have attachment to representing Northern Ireland, and who think that the flag or the Ulster banner is a suitable emblem for that. And that in the context where many young athletes who want to compete in international sport in Northern Ireland outside the Commonwealth Games, if they want to compete internationally, because of the orientation of so many sports on an all-Ireland basis, like boxing and others, they have to box for Ireland. They have to wrap themselves in the Irish tricolour. That is hugely offensive to many young unionist sports people. And yet that is the requirement, because Sport NI and others have never taken a stand on that issue. And now, on top of that, we have the Commonwealth Games Association thinking that they should expunge the use of the Ulster banner so that they totally leave any unionist-minded or anyone who's just loyal to being a part of Northern Ireland, they expunge from them the right to
Jim, they're only asking for an inclusive flag, a flag which everybody can wrap around them.
They are peddling the line that Northern Ireland, from which they get their funding, which is a part of the United Kingdom, should not be represented by a flag which contains, as an inset, the national flag of which Northern Ireland is a part. Now, that is offensive to me. I believe it is offensive to many young athletes. And I do say again, these people are needlessly meddling in politics. And in
so how would you expect, Jim, a young nationalist, forget about young, a nationalist of any age who does not who does not feel comfortable with the Union flag around them, having it around them at the Commonwealth Games?
Well, two things about that. There seems to be no regard...
This Union banner.
There seems to be no regard for young unionists who have to wrap the Irish tricolour around them in the Olympics and other things. But let's remember, these are the British Commonwealth Games. If someone wants to participate in the Commonwealth Games, they are participating in something that by historic genesis is a British-style institution. So in doing that, why should they be surprised that there would be a flag which is of that orientation?
Because in Northern Ireland, Jim, this specific place with all of the history and problems that we have had, we get the very positive outcomes when we try to be as inclusive as possible.
The Commonwealth Games,
and their chief executive is essentially saying, let's be as inclusive as possible, and he's telling the executive that they ought to design an Ulster, a new banner to replace the Ulster banner, which is as inclusive as possible. How does that not make sense to you?
Well, how is this partisan chief executive, has he ever taken a stand for young non-nationalist athletes who are offended by the fact they have to wrap themselves in the Irish tricolour in the Olympics? Has he ever shown an interest in that, or is he only interested? Is he only interested in expunging any trace of that which identifies Northern Ireland as part of the United Kingdom within the Commonwealth setting? Is he only interested?
Well, he would say he's not partisan,
like,
Jim. And what he's dealing with here is what will be happening at the Commonwealth Games. He's not looking outside that. He's dealing with the Commonwealth Games, and he is the chief executive of Commonwealth Games NI.
What are the Commonwealth Games but that which historically are part of the British Commonwealth syndrome? So, you know, this is a man who's quite happy to earn his living promoting Commonwealth Games, but then wants to expunge from that any British connection.
Well, it's not just him. It's not just him. He's representing the views of the Northern Ireland Commonwealth Games Council. So, and it's maybe unhelpful, Jim, to personalise it all about him when you know, we broke this story yesterday, you know, he's had to contact the police because of fears for his own safety.
Well, of course, nobody should be threatening anyone about any of this, nor should he be threatening to meddle in politics, which are none of his business.
So again, to nationalist members of our community living here in Northern Ireland, what do you say to them, helping them with what will be wrapped around them when they're participating in sport?
Well, if they choose and wish to participate in the Commonwealth Games, and I welcome that, then they should know the territory. It is the Commonwealth Games. And surely with the Commonwealth Games, it is natural and to be expected that there would be linkage to the historic British Commonwealth, and therefore to seek to remove any reference to the flag of Britishness, it seems to me incredible. And I repeat, where is the interest from this gentleman or from others, including Sport NI, in bringing equity and fairness to young athletes in boxing, in tennis, in hockey, in all those other sports, whereby if they want to compete internationally, they can only do it wrapped in an Irish tricolour? When that issue is addressed, then it'll be time enough to talk about the other matters.
Jim Allister, thank you very much. I know you need to go this morning. Joe and Cully Backey. Morning, Joe.
Morning, Steve. First of all, I don't see why this issue has ever even arisen. I'm 84 coming next month, and I remember the great Jim McCourt Oxenford, and that, under that, the existing flag, upon the guy Nash from Derry, another great boxer. But why, if these people, firstly, if these people want a new flag, they should present, they should be presenting what their idea is regarding this
new flag. Well, they're asking the people that have the political mandate, the executive, to come up with a decision on this.
But Steve, you're missing it. These guys, if these people have their view that this should be a change, they should also have some idea what this change is they require. And this guy who is now under threat, I mean, why is up? If you're going to put yourself out there in peasant society and make these stances, you can only expect a reaction.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Joe. Don't be absolutely ridiculous.
Look, you take last week down in...
Sorry, no, I'm not... No. Hold on a minute. No. Listen to me, Joe. I want to be very clear here. We do not expect a reaction of someone being threatened who is simply expressing a view.
I want the guy threatened. I didn't say I condoned that. I didn't say I condoned that. You're saying what could he expect.
I'll tell you what he could expect. He could expect in a democratic society to be able to express his view and there to be a debate on it.
Correct. I support that approach totally. But this whole thing has been evolved out of this committee. And they, if they're going to have a negative reaction from parts of our society, they can. How can they expect otherwise? And people like Jimmy Court, the great boxer, Conlon from West Belfast, Nash from Derry, all boxed under the existing flag without any issue. And these guys are only stirring. Okay. Joe, hold on.
Thank you, Brian. Very quickly, Joe. Go ahead. Let you finish your point very quickly.
Thanks very much. These guys, what is this all about? Who was actually complaining about the flag? Nobody.
Well, that's not true. If you look at what Conal Heatley has said, he referred to this yesterday in other statements. He said that there are athletes that are competing in these games who do feel uncomfortable with that banner. Brian next. Morning, Brian.
Good morning, Stephen. Politicians like for the DUP and the TUV don't realise the majority of people are fed up with the flags, fed up flags been burned, fed up flags been ridiculed, fed up with banners been pulled down and so forth every year, five or six months of the year. Yes, have a flag or a banner that is a sporting flag, nothing to do with politics. As Gavin Robinson said, keep the constitutional matters to the politicians. The governing body are not nothing to do with the constitutional here. They're not even a political party.
So this will be called Team NI, Brian, right?
Yes.
NI is who are competing in these Commonwealth Games. Team NI. Well, guess what? There's a significant part of our community who are living in Northern Ireland who do not like the Ulster banner.
I have no problems with the Ulster banner or Union Jack.
You don't. What about those people who do?
I have no. Well, what I'm saying is the politicians should know better. We have a problem here with flags and banners. So let's have a flag and banner that suits everybody. And there'll be no arguments then.
Well, Jim Wilson's called us. I can tell you every line into the BBC is now calling about, is taken up with people calling about this. This is a big story. It's a significant issue. We need to debate it out. Jim Wilson, obviously, from the Loyalist community. Jim, why not a flag, a banner, whatever you want to call this, for sport, for everybody?
Well, Stephen, the chip and hammer is there, and it just seems to be constantly going, chipping away at what we believe is our Britishness, the Ulster flag as we see it, as a flag. And I'll give you an example of it, Stephen. Northern Ireland were playing Scotland a lot of years back, and I was over there with Northern Ireland supporters. Their flag was taken off them by the police in Scotland, right? Because they were told it was a sectarian flag, right? Number one. Now, the flag was brought back and there was an apology given through in the Scotland Parliament. But that's not my point. Here's my point, Stephen. Do you think in the New Ireland or the New United Ireland, whichever you want to call it, do you think that whenever and when that happens, that they would put a wee Union Jack up in the corner to represent my community and the people that live and want it to be British? Do you think for 1 minute that they will change that flag down the south to accommodate what our beliefs are? And do you think that this is always having a go at what we are? It's the crown that annoys them. It's the crown that annoys them. I respect anyone, whatever religion they may be, who play for Northern Ireland, who represent Northern Ireland, but they have to realise when they're living now in Northern Ireland, we are part of the United Kingdom. And that is the flag that we have designated as our flag. If you don't want to play under it, if you do not want to go out and do the Commonwealth Games or whatever under it, then don't do it. It's as simple as that.
Don't do it. Really?
That's your call, Stephen.
Are you suggesting unionists send a message?
Are you suggesting, Jim,
let me put the question to you. Are you suggesting, seriously suggesting, that unionists should be telling young nationalist athletes, it's our way or get out of sport? Is that really what you're saying?
Stephen, that's not what I said. And don't try and mix my
words. So, what about nationalists who do not want that flag?
If they have a difficulty, and a lot of people have had a difficulty playing for football under the flag of our country, the Union Jack, never mind the Ulster flag, they had a difficulty under the Union Jack. They had a difficulty with the poppy. That's understandable. That's their beliefs. They're entitled to that. But the simple answer is, why should we change our flag? Why should we change our... Why is it always us that has to be the ones that give? But given the Good Friday Agreement, constantly the things that we had to accept to try and get this country to peace. And it wasn't us who brought this country to war.
So,
you know what I mean? Tell me this. Ask the Republicans, would they accept a Union Jack up the corner of the tricolour if and when they get their dream of a United Ireland?
So, Jim, clearly what we're talking about here is sport. Clearly what we're talking about here is a group of people on the board of Commonwealth Games NI, who come from all different parts and all different backgrounds of our society. This is a sporting body saying that a more neutral flag would be more inclusive for sport. This is not about a war. This is not about the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. It's about all athletes, this is what they're saying, all athletes feeling comfortable within one banner. Now,
Stephen,
do you get that?
Stephen, look, I manage Northern Ireland Amateur League side against Scotland, right? An international side. I manage them. I had young Catholics, I had young Protestants playing in that team, right? None of them had an issue or issues. People raise these issues that cause controversy. And at the end of the day, I'm constantly fed up with it. You know, I'm 70-odd years of age, and I am just sick to the teeth this year. The greatest golfer, one of the greatest number one golfers in the world, has no issue putting an Ulster flag around him representing this country.
Well, that's Rory McIlroy you're talking about.
Absolutely. So what's the difference?
Well, what we don't know
is... What's the difference?
What we
and
don't
Rory,
know...
Rory's also got a tricolour as well around him.
But what we don't know, Jim, is would Rory feel more comfortable with a new banner as the Commonwealth Games NI are saying should happen? And they have now, within this new statement issued by them, put a deadline on this. A final decision will have to be made a few months before the games begin in Glasgow. This is their message to the executive. Now, Jim, stay there. And, Chris Donnelly, former Sinn Féin election candidate, nationalist commentator with us this morning. Morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. What do you make of what Jim's saying? And hopefully you can both engage with each other.
Well, I didn't hear much of what Jim was saying. I just heard kind of the end. But the bit I did catch, it's the age-old stuff that some people want to cling to the past. They want to cling to a sense that this region, the north of Ireland, Northern Ireland, should exclusively belong to one group of people. And let's think about it logically. No one within unionism, no one, has ever made the case for the union flag to be changed to accommodate the Irish nationalist minority living within the north of Ireland, whilst sovereignty resides in a UK context. So for Jim or others to throw up, oh, the Irish tricolour needs to be changed if there's unionism, that's nonsense.
Can we stick to the Ulster banner? Can we stick to
this
banner?
I'm coming to that one. I'm coming to that scene because that's important, because there is a difference. The national flag issue is at one level. There is no flag, however, that represents the north of Ireland. There is no legal status to the Ulster banner. Zero, zilch. There is no legitimacy attached to any organisation saying that that is legally the flag that we will use. They make a choice, and people are entitled to make a choice. So we know that the Irish Football Association decide that they want to use that. Some other sporting associations might use that. Some local football clubs might fly that flag. They might use that. But it is very legitimate for Conall Healy and those within the Commonwealth team that represent this region to say, listen, there's no legal status for that flag. We know that it exclusively is associated with one tradition in the north of Ireland. We know that in 2024, and this is the ultimate irony, Stephen, the demographics of this region mean that it is almost certain that at least half of those athletes are going to come from the tradition that has no affinity to that flag. So it is logical for Mr. Healy to be raising this issue and say, listen, would it not be better to get something else? And let me say this, the vilification of that man, Conall Healy, for what he has raised is absolutely shocking. And we've seen it at a political level. We've seen it at other levels. I mean, your show led yesterday with the fact that there were threats against that man and the organization. How appalling is that? For what? Raising the issue that people, when they go to a sporting event representing our shared region, where we don't have an agreed flag, that maybe it might be something to think of some emblem that might people might feel more attractive having wrapping around themselves or standing beneath. I mean, it's a logical conversation to have. And instead, we've had the usual, how dare he, he's betraying people. That's all nonsense. This is where we are in 2024.
Jim Wilson, let me let you reply to Chris and speak to him.
There's a simple answer that I believe he's talking a load of rubbish. Because does he forget all those Catholic lads who stood under the flag when they played for Northern Ireland? Does he forget that Rory McIlroy as a Catholic? So you're not speaking and saying that every Catholic does not want the under our flag. So, you know, let's
Jim,
get real.
Jim,
if he's
you're making
something
a real easy mistake.
No. You said that the Catholic,
you're saying that
there's no Catholic people want to do under the flag.
Can I remind you, this is an Ulster banner for sport.
I'm wondering.
Absolutely.
No, but, you know, if he's going to say something, Stephen, he has to quantify and qualify it. He said that, you know, 50% of people who are Catholics would not want to serve under that flag. And if they don't like that flag, okay, and then we'll just revert back to the Union Jack. Would he be happy with that? That's the flag of this country.
Well, you see, and that's your problem, Jim. That's your problem in the north.
I don't have a problem.
The union, well, you do, because when it comes to the Commonwealth Games, it's a regional flag that would be used. Scotland or Wales or England would use their own flags. The issue with the north of Ireland is there is no shared flag. Some people have decided to use the flag of the old unionist regime, which is the Ulster banner, but there is no legal status to that flag. So the challenge, and ironically, it's more of a challenge for those who want the union to continue, is to say, would it not be good for us to try to make an emblem that represents distinctly this region whilst it continues to exist in the United Kingdom? Would it not be good for us to find something that was appealing for them? And by the way, there are many people, be friends of mine from unionist background, big Northern Ireland supporters, they get how they know that it isn't a winning strategy to try to get those young lads from a nationalist background and tell them, you're going to stand there with your head down when God Save the Queen is played underneath our flag. Do you think that attracts those lads to play for you, Jim? Really? Do you think that's a winner?
And do, And do you think in your new Ireland and your new United Ireland, do you think then the lads who would be Protestants who would not want to go into that, who would vote against that, how do you think they would feel? So let me finish. So would you be acceptable to having a Union Jack up in the corner of the tricolour?
Let's let him answer it. We'll give him a chance to answer it.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm waiting on it.
Okay. The issue around the Union flag has never been addressed at all. We have never changed. There's been no one ever arguing to change the Union flag. In fact, no one's ever argued to change God Save the King or Queen as the national anthem of the United Kingdom. So unionism will, in the United Ireland context, will have no right to address the issue of the national flag at all. Having said all of that, I still would be up for having that conversation. And if you look at sporting organisations today, Irish rugby actually take the lead, and others, cricket do as well, to say that even though Irish rugby, the IRFU, represent a sovereign state, as in Ireland, as well as the North, they decide to say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to play another song alongside the national anthem. And when we have matches, they actually give out other flags too. So they make a gesture to show, to acknowledge people from the north of Ireland who might represent Ireland that, you know, we want to respect that you are playing here. What gesture comes, Jim, from people who want young lads and young girls from the nationalist community to represent Northern Ireland Commonwealth Games? Is it not time that there was some gesture to say, listen,
Stephen,
it's not only the right thing to do, it's actually in unionism's own strategic interest.
Once again, that's not true what you just said there. I don't know where you live, but do you not remember a long way back the Northern Ireland, the argument about a new song for Northern Ireland, the football team? Do you not remember that being an issue a lot of years back? Because I do.
And what happened?
So you're trying to say, nothing happened because it wasn't prepared. People weren't prepared to continue to give what you seem to want. And then do the accommodate. Listen, the accommodation, I'm prepared to accommodate anybody. I've done mountains of work cross community and where I live. So I have no issues with helping and wanting to see the Catholic people and the nationalist people being happy and safe and feeling good within the United Kingdom. It's as simple as that. I would do a lot of things, and we've done a lot of things in this country to try and achieve that. Let me finish. You're sitting there saying you have no issues around the Queen or the God Save the King being played. You still have issues. There was issues about a lot of years back about the football side and about that. And then the rugby team as well, whenever that was happening, they had to redo
right.
and get a new song.
Let's concentrate on what we're talking about here.
Let's be honest about it there.
Right, Jim, let's concentrate, because I've got to go to the news. Let's concentrate on what we're talking about here, present day, right? November 2024, Commonwealth Games and I are saying to the executive, design a new inclusive flag. Now, the key part is inclusive, Jim. So it wouldn't work unless unionists were as comfortable with it as nationalists. So what would be wrong to aspiring to that, Jim? That we all, no matter what our political backgrounds are, feel, well, that's Team NI has an NI banner that represents unionists and nationalists and everybody. What would be wrong with that?
Stephen, I listened to the rugby match the other week. They played the Irish national anthem, and then they played the other song. Right? So, you're telling me that we are not given enough to the nationalist and Catholic community, and that we need to do this if people want to represent Northern Ireland. We have to change the flag to accommodate. Is that what you're saying to me? We have to change our flag to accommodate.
The point, Jim, is that it is not your... The issue is when it comes to the Commonwealth Games, you don't have ownership of that. You don't. There is no legal status to the Ulster banner that's used. So whilst Commonwealth Games, and I understand them going to the executive and saying, we need you to do this, actually, I think that's a mistake. I think that's a mistake because I don't think they're going to get any political.
Let's let him finish.
I think, Stephen, that the problem with Commonwealth Games and I are doing it, and they're probably right to do it, to show that there's going to be a political stalemate on this. They got to make the move themselves to say, and really, one way they could do it is say we want a new banner. Another way, you know, look at Ulster Rugby. Ulster Rugby used the two Ulster flags. They used the Ulster banner, and they used the nine-county Ulster flag that people would associate from the nationalist tradition.
That's a positive way of saying,
look, both of our Ulsters, both of our regions are represented at this time.
I'm going to pause there.
There are others out there.
I'm going to pause there very quickly, Mr. Wilson.
Right. What is his problem with the Ulster flag? If he tells me what the problem is, then maybe it could be rectified. But I know what the problem is. It's the crown above the horn is the problem with him. And maybe he's creating it that other people within the Catholic community don't want to stand under that flag.
As a lawyer would say in court, you've asked and answered. You've asked them and you've answered it. What is your problem, Chris Donnelly? Do you want to answer it?
Listen, let me say this. It's not a problem because I recognise that there are other people in this community that flag means something to do. But flags, anywhere you go in the world, Stephen, some people have an affinity with them for all sorts of reasons, and others won't. So, I mean, it's clearly in this society recognised as a flag associated with the Unionist and Loyalist community, including by Unionists and Loyalists. And we're not stupid people here.
Well, look, we're going to drop things from our running order this morning in order to accommodate the huge volume of people that are phoning us today about this. In the meantime, Jim and Chris, thank you. 0330 80 55 55. Here comes the news from the BBC. Right, well, yesterday on Good Morning Ulster, the DUP leader Gavin Robinson described some of the comments made by the Commonwealth Games NI chief executive Conal Heatley as appalling. Let's have a listen.
I think that last comment was an appalling comment to make. I remember there being a protest in front of City Hall during the summer on race issues, and a gentleman was holding an Irish tricolour, yet I don't hear such political commentary in that direction. And I think in Northern Ireland we have recognised over many years that sport unites people. And yet here we have somebody who is charged with encouraging success through sport, engaging in politics in the most unhelpful way. I don't think this is a good initiative on his part. I don't think this assists in sport, nor does it assist in bringing people together when this chief executive appears to believe it's his role to pick scabs on identity. There are people in Northern Ireland who have the proud ability to showcase their talent, be it for Northern Ireland at the Commonwealth Games, Team GB in the Olympics, or Team Ireland. And they do that without any thought whatsoever about constitutional politics. And yet here is a man charged with promoting sport, engaging in that discussion. He should leave it to politicians.
Thank you very much indeed for being with us, DUP MP and leader Gavin Robinson.
So that's Sarah Brett, obviously, speaking to Gavin yesterday. The reference to appalling, that's when Conal Heatley said that the flag had been used to intimidate people with the likes of in certain housing areas in Northern Ireland. Patrick's in Belfast. Morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, Conal Heatley and Commonwealth Games NI, they've doubled down this morning. They've issued that statement and they've given the executive a deadline a few months before the games begin in Glasgow. Try to have a new inclusive flag ready, is what they're saying.
Well, I don't want to push Jim over the edge because he sounds like he's his borders about to bust. But not only did Northern Ireland or the north of Ireland not have a flag, but they don't have an Irish anthem either.
What do you mean?
Well, Scotland have their own, which is like Flora Scotland, and their own flag. And then you go to Wales and they have theirs too. But Northern Ireland don't have.
Do you think the Ulster banner should be replaced?
Well, I would say yes. But I don't know what to replace it with, to be honest with you.
Well, that's what the Commonwealth Games NI crowd are saying the executive to come up with.
Well, I think years ago during the boxing, I don't know what particular boxer it was. I'd take a stab in the dark and say it was either Paddy Barnes or Michael Conlon. And during their fight, they came, I think it was second or whatever it was, And when they were going up, they were going like, that's not my flag. And when the flags go up for the ceremony, you know, for the presentation.
Okay. Well, I've no idea who did that, and nor do you, but I'm sure we can find out. James, morning, James.
Yeah. Well, good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
I was talking to you yesterday, and I don't think you really understood what I was saying. There's a very simple answer to all of this, and I hope you're listening to me. It's called the Cross of St. Patrick. It's a white flag with a red cross diagonally.
No, I did understand this, but the point I'm making back to you is you've got a situation now with the biggest unionist party in Northern Ireland, the DUP, is saying no. Bought out.
No to what? No, but they don't, yes, mud out certainly, but that flag that I'm talking about, called the Cross of St. Patrick,
yes,
was designed about 250 years ago.
But
has been used,
yes,
a white flag with a red cross on it, that has been used this last 200 or 300 years as the flag. Exactly the same
but
as somebody mentioned there this morning, the England have,
yes,
a flag, Scotland have a flag, and so has Ireland.
James, you're making an interesting point. But do you understand the point I'm making back to you that I was making yesterday as well? This is not about the executive saying they have exhausted all their options and all the brain cells that they all have together and they just can't come up with something. This is about the DUP and others saying, don't touch our banner. We're not changing it. It's two different things here.
That's silly because that Ulster flag or Ulster banner,
yes,
which is white with a red up and down and across line, that was only designed about 30 or 40 years ago.
Okay.
That's got nothing to do with the flag of...
Okay. Thank you, James. Williams in Armagh. In fact, we'll go to William in Armagh in just a second or two. There's another story, or other stories this morning that I want to cover with you all as well. So we'll come back to this. If you're calling us, 030-30-80-55-55. We'll try to get as many of you on air this morning. Conal Heatley, he gave an interview to the newsletter. It would be good if Conal Heatley could engage with us this morning. The chief exec of Commonwealth Games, NI, it would be good to hear from him and hear him expand on why the Commonwealth Games have doubled down, given what was said yesterday. I want to break away, though, for another story. I think it's an important story. Adults in Northern Ireland are more likely to look at pornography online than those in any part of the UK. This is according to new research published by the communications regulator Ofcom. Our education correspondent Robbie Meredith with us today. The question, Robbie, is why?
That is a good question, Stephen. I'm not quite sure. What was striking, as you say, was that, look, these are figures from Ofcom, so it's fairly robust research. But when they looked at adults' use of online pornography, they found that in Northern Ireland, over a third of the population, the adult population, were accessing online pornography. They took a snapshot across the UK back in May 2024. Now, it's not that the proportion here is massively higher than England, Scotland and Wales. It's about 3 in 10 adults in England, Scotland and Wales, but still quite striking that Northern Ireland has the highest number of users of online pornography proportionally of any nation in the UK. I suppose where I was interested in that is, you probably know, Stephen, there's been a lot of discussion about what we teach children in school and relationship and sex education. Now, these figures are for adults, obviously, but there's a lot of concern that especially the number of young people who are able to access pornography, that has a very corrosive effect on how they see relationships, how they see sex. So these were quite striking figures. Although, as ever with these Ofcom reports, there's a ton of other data, which is very interesting. But I suppose it's the fact that in Northern Ireland we have the most or the highest proportion of adults who access online pornography very regularly is something that might concern some people.
You can look at this in another way. If you're saying that it's over a third who access adult pornography, adults who access pornography, some people might be surprised that two-thirds of adults do not.
Yeah, in fact, when I mentioned these figures actually yesterday to a couple of people, they said I thought they would have been higher. I don't know what that tells you, but you're right. So some people, you know, given, I suppose, these days, all of us know we spend a lot of time on our phones. In fact, adults here spend about 4.25 hours a day online, mostly on their smartphones. So given the ease of access to online pornography, it perhaps is surprising that, as you say, two-thirds of people don't. We have to assume, though, of course, that people were telling the truth when they were asked about this. I suppose, I mean, look, Ofcom's research is very robust. It has quite a big sample size. But obviously, people have to admit to using these sites. There might be some people who, even anonymously, wouldn't admit to it. Again, we have to stress that this is legal. These are adults. But I suppose some people will have concerns about the use of pornography here.
So, you know, for everybody, clearly we're not going to hear from everybody, but for all of you who are listening to this programme this morning, have any of you, how many of you can honestly answer to yourselves that you haven't looked up pornography? And the statistics are suggesting that two-thirds of you have told this survey that you haven't, who participated in the survey. Robbie, thank you. Morning to you. Zero 30 30 80 55 55. Teresa in Ballanderry. Morning, Teresa.
Hello, Stephen. How are you? Stephen, first of all, Jim Allister said you're expected to adopt yourself from the tricolour if you won. Nobody has to wrap themselves in a flag. You still play under it, but you don't have to wrap yourself in it. Whereas you wrap yourself in the Northern Ireland banner, that's a sectarian flag. You look at any loyalist area, it's flying alongside paramilitary flags. What does that tell anybody?
Well, you're designating it as sectarian.
Yes, it's flying
you
alongside.
Are. That doesn't make it sectarian, does it?
It does when it's flown and drawn on walls to intimidate people out of a certain area.
So the misuse.
They don't want Gaelic there.
So the misuse of a banner then is a reason to get rid of it. Is that
correct?
Right?
Correct. Yes, it is.
Oh, it
and
is,
they
right.
talked about Jim Wilson talked about a flag of an all Ireland flag. There's no problem in putting the four provinces of Ireland in each corner of a flag. Ulster is a province of Ireland, and they have their own symbol. So why not put the four provinces in the corner of a flag? That's inclusive to everybody.
So if there was a United Ireland, would you change the tricolour?
Yes, you could put it, say you could change it and put for the four provinces in.
Do you think it would be changed?
Well, it's up to discussion as well at the end of the day. But as I say, the four provinces put onto a flag in whatever form they want to do it, it covers all of Ireland. Would you not agree?
Well, that's your opinion, and thank you for making it on the programme this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. The Alliance MLA Nuala McAllister told the Nolan Show yesterday that if a more inclusive option could be found, she would support a change to Northern Ireland's Commonwealth Games flag.
Well, I don't believe it is inclusive, to be perfectly honest. I don't. However, it isn't an issue for me that would be one of my priorities of, you know, kind of sorting out and
sure. Do you think it should be replaced?
However, I do think that if we could find a way for a flag to be more inclusive that is representative of everyone, that we should do it.
Well, Commonwealth Games NI, the reason we're doing this for a second day in a row is the reaction to the DUP yesterday, telling them to butt out of politics. The reaction is for them to have issued a new statement advising the executive, they've doubled down essentially, advising the executive to have the flag, the new flag, the new banner ready a few months before the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. What they've precisely said is that they should have a decision made around it a few months before the Commonwealth Games begin in Glasgow. But we know that they are advising that decision should be a new flag. Dr. Dominic Bryan was chair of the Commission on Flags, Identity, Culture and Tradition. I want to remind you what he told us yesterday when talking about the Ulster banner and his thought that it doesn't work as a symbol for everybody in Northern Ireland.
So on that issue, we didn't have a consensus. There was quite a few of us, and I count myself among them, who were very keen on an alternative flag, but there was no consensus amongst the political parties. I think listening to some of the things that we said, what's important to say here is that however much some people passionately love the Ulster banner or the Northern Ireland flag, whichever way you want to call it, it doesn't work as a symbol for everybody in Northern Ireland. And you can't get away from the fact that because of its history, and it's got quite a short history, actually, it doesn't really work in that way. And I suspect that's why the Commonwealth Associations are not keen on using it.
So are you standing square to square with what Conall Heatley has said, Dominic? Do you support and agree with what he's saying? Stormont should come up with a new flag for the Commonwealth Games.
I do think it would be a good idea to have a new flag. I think it would be a good idea to have something that could represent everybody. And here's something to think about. I would have thought making something that represents Northern Ireland well is something that unionists on the whole should be supportive of going forward. I totally understand what they feel about the past and the use of that flag. But if we're to make Northern Ireland work, you have to find ways of bringing people together. And I think that is a good reason for finding an alternative flag.
030 30 80 55 55. As I promised you this morning, we'll continue to take your calls right throughout the show this morning, and we'll bounce between other stories as well. Fraud and scamming. Lots of you are engaging with this with the programme. The internet, of course, has changed the game in favour of the criminals, who can now rob you anonymously, no borders, without fear of being caught. The BBC is trying to play its part in helping to stop scammers through BBC Scam Safe Week. Consumer journalist Rebecca Wilcox with us this morning. Morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. So look, the scammers are getting... They just keep on coming up with new ways of tricking us and fooling us, right?
Oh, they do. They are a bunch of nefarious criminals who I strongly dislike. Nay, could I say hate? Because actually, why would anyone like somebody whose sole purpose is to dupe somebody into parting with their money, parting with their information? And they're so sophisticated. Every time we hear about a new scam, they elevate their game. And they particularly work on current affairs. So there's been storms across central England this week, and they have been already cold calling people to convince them to part with their money, to have their properties fixed, and obviously they're fake. They're lining up many frauds and scams in time for Black Friday, which is now being called Black Fraud Day. And the other thing that I can't bear about scams is the victim blaming that seems to go hand in hand with it. And I hate the word victim for this, because I think it's not like that. We're targets. Every single person is a target. Even other scammers to other scammers are targets. But when you have been scammed, you feel ashamed, and you shouldn't. They are so clever and so sophisticated, they could convince the best of us. All of us on the scam team have very nearly or have fallen for a scam. You are not alone in this. So I would beg people, if they think they have been scammed, to contact their bank, contact their insurer, contact somebody, the Action Fraud Team. We dial 159 here, and you're straight through to the fraud team, and they can check what's happened. And the quicker you do it, the more likely it is to be resolved in your favour, and the scammer could be got. Never, never, never feel guilty and ashamed. Share your story. It's so helpful for other people as well.
So what are the what are the kind of ABCs of this to try to protect ourselves from it? So my mother's 83.
Right.
Mum and I have a deal. And the deal is, if anybody phones her about any financial information whatsoever, she immediately tells them that I will phone them back, and she puts down the phone, me Brilliant. As her son. And that's the deal her and I have. So anybody talks about money to her in any way, the phone goes down. Anybody asks for her address, any details, the phone goes down, and it's only I will deal with it.
Well, that's fantastic, and I only wish that was true for everybody, but it's also quite hard to remember it in the moment. You have to drill it into your head to remember, hold on, stop, think. Is this a scam? Which is why we've been sending out stickers. They're free. You can go onto the BBC website and ask for them. They stick on your phone, next to your landline, on your diary, wherever, next to your computer, wherever it might be that you might be accessed by a scammer. So your email, your post, put it on your postbox. And all it says is stop, think. could this be a scam? Could this be fraud? And it's taking the time to listen to what I call the lizard sense. You know how lizards have that strange third eye on the top of their head and they can sense the hawk circling above them. We innately have that. We just don't listen to it. So if something feels a little bit not right, then stop. If it's a genuine person on the other end of the line, at the other end of the email or the post, wherever it may be, if it is a genuine person, they absolutely will not mind you saying, hold on, I need to go and think about this, and hanging up. If it's a landline, what I would say is double check that you have properly hung up, because some of these scammers have been able to hack into landlines so that you then hear a dial tone when you pick it up, but they haven't actually hung up. So then go and use a different device to phone your bank, to phone a trusted friend. Get a second opinion. You are that brilliant second opinion for your mother, a neighbour, or Citizens Advice, anybody. There's so many action fraud helplines out there, and they desperately want to help you make the right decisions. There's a wonderful line.
And a bank will never ask, for example, a bank will never ask you to disclose your sort code and account number or any PINs or any passwords. They will never do it.
Exactly. No one will ever phone you out of the blue. So what Matt Allwright always says is, if it's out of the blue, think, is it really for you, or it might not be for you? So somebody phoning to say, oh, someone's in your bank account, quick, give us your sort code and account number and we'll stop it. No. One, they're rushing you. That's a really good sign that there's a scammer on the other end of the phone. And two, they should not ever ask for your details.
Rebecca, thank you for that. bbc.co.uk/actionline. If you want some help and advice, and you're thinking about this, Rebecca, you're before we go, we have 2 minutes before the news. Your mum is Esther Ranson. I've talked to your mum many times on Five Live and here on Radio Ulster. Big vote in the House of Commons tomorrow around assisted dying, Rebecca, and your mother is very passionate about that. Are you too?
Oh, yes. We are hand in hand with it. I will be in the public gallery, crossing my fingers and toes and anything else that will get that way inclined and flexible. We are really hopeful that this bill, which has compassion and safeguards at its core, will go through to the next round. And I only hope that people listen to sense and listen to the population, who are all in favour of it.
Well, all of the population obviously are not in favour of it.
No,
it actually doesn't apply to Northern Ireland. And there are many people who would argue that do not let emotion get in the middle of this. This is about protecting life no matter what.
I would say it is protecting life to the point where it needs protecting. So that's why the safeguards are in the bill. But also, what are the last 4 days of writhing and agony when the pain barrier is surpassed and opioids don't help? What worth is that life? If that person is in such agony and they want to end their lives, why can't they? It is a choice at the end of the day. And we all live our lives making the right choices for ourselves.
And has your mum had conversations with you about fear of ending in pain?
Yes, absolutely. She's booked her tickets to Dignitas, which is an interesting trip that I'm hoping not to have to go on anytime soon with her. I know that she has lived her life according to her set of rules, her ethics, and she's a brilliant, moral, rational, logical person. And this just seems like the most sensible course for her with her cancer the way it is.
Rebecca, thank you for talking to us today. Obviously, if legislation was to come in, it would not apply automatically to Northern Ireland. The local Stormont executive would have to decide what happens here in Northern Ireland. But there are loads of politicians here who are talking about this, and you can too. 0330 80 55 55. Now, an STLP MLA has said £7.5 million brought in last year in hospital car parking charges is a drop in the ocean compared to the overall health budget. Last year, hospital parking, £7.5 million. In 2022, our MLAs passed the Hospital Parking Charges Act, which would mean no more parking fees for staff or patients at our hospitals. It's not planned to be in place, though, until May 2026. Colin McGrath, the STLP's health spokesperson, said the executive should get on with delivering it sooner. Professor Deirdre Heenan from Ulster University with us this morning. Morning, Deirdre.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And Patrick Mulholland from NIPSA. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Stephen.
What do you think, Deirdre?
Well, it sounds like a great idea on the face of it. Everybody likes something free. What's not to like? But it isn't actually that straightforward. It's quite complex and complicated. We know that our hospital car parks are already under pressure, and this is actually going to make a bad situation worse. It's a policy idea proposed by our MLAs and a perfect illustration of a vote winner, something that's popular, but actually they haven't really thought through what the implications of it will be.
So what do you think should be happening?
Well, the debate is in two parts. First is, should we have free car parking for hospital staff? And we've had a debate in England.
And Scotland. What do you think?
Well, no, we shouldn't, because we don't have free car parking for staff in the civil service. We don't have free park car kit. For most people pay for car parking. So why would hospitals be different? And of course, it's different from just turning up to your workplace, because it's about visitors and vulnerable people. And how do we ensure that if we had free car parking, we know the evidence in England and Scotland suggests that people would simply come and park all day. It would be abused by those who decide they want to park there.
I actually think, first of all, some of the civil service do have free car parking. It's free at Stormont. Secondly, I'm 99% sure, and I'll check this. I remember a couple of years ago on the Nolan Show, looking at a story where actually, you know, NIPLC was paying for car parking spaces for people in civil service jobs in Belfast City Centre and elsewhere. So there is free car parking for some people in the civil service,
For some people, yeah. There is free car parking. In the same way, for some people who work for the health service, there is free car parking. But hospitals are a different animal, because we're talking about well-paid consultants. We're talking about relatively low-paid workers.
You're also talking about porters and nurses,
yes,
and others.
Exactly. But we're talking about visitors as well. And we don't have, by and large, separate car parks. So basically, and of course, there are people across Northern Ireland who are in low-paid work who don't have free car parking. Free car parking is regressive. It's a subsidy it's likely to benefit those that earn more. Government statistics show that the poorer you are, the less likely you are to own a car. So it's the better off who are going to get advantage of this. They will choose to avail of free parking rather than get a taxi or get public transport. And as we have said, not all hospital staff are poorly paid. So it's therefore unfair. But really, for me, it's more than that. I was in Craigavon Hospital yesterday, and there are people driving around and around trying to get car parking spaces. So unless we have plans to build a huge number of free car parks, what we're going to find is that spaces that are already under pressure will be put under further pressure, because people will say, well, I'll simply park here all day.
Patrick?
That beggars belief. I think the one point maybe I'd make to Deirdre is, she said that people are looking to get this for free. Can I be clear about something? Our people already pay for the health service. They pay for it through taxation. There's nothing free here. What is happening here is that there's progressively a privatisation of how we deliver services. There's progressively making people pay twice for the services they should be getting free in the first place. Is it really too much to say in this day and age that people who are having to go and visit patients who are maybe dying in a ward, and they're having to go back and forward repeatedly to them? Is it too much to say that if they can't visit because they can't afford the car parking? And that is the reality of what people are dealing with. The chief executive of the Western Trust gave evidence the other day that people are cancelling appointments because they're in such an impoverished position that they can't miss a day's work. And is Deirdre seriously telling me that low-paid people who are being charged for car parking spaces aren't being forced into a position to have to go in another direction?
Well,
Let me finish. But just on the point that you brought up, Patrick, about patients.
Hold on, then we'll move on to that.
Yeah.
But the point you brought up about if people are visiting their loved ones who are dying.
Yeah.
We did a story last year through a Freedom of Information request. The Nolan Show did this last year. And staff at the Royal Victoria Hospital, we uncovered, were parking in 80% of spaces allocated to hospital visitors.
Are you asking me, Stephen, is there enough car parking spaces at our hospitals Close hospitals out.
What I'm saying to you is, when you present as part of your argument that hospital visitors shouldn't have to pay. The visiting spaces are being occupied 80% of the time by staff. That undermines your argument about visitors, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't undermine anything, Stephen. There'd be no undermining of this argument. Let me get back to the nonsense that was just said there. We have staff in the health service who rely on food banks. They are then being charged for hospital parking spaces in some hospitals, mark you, not all of them. So some hospitals, they're charged for parking spaces. It's a tax on people to go to work. It's outrageous to even begin to raise those sort of ideas.
So why this should everyone not have free parking? Why should everyone not have free parking?
Well, why shouldn't they? If they're going to their work, why shouldn't they? Why are they subsidizing?
But you know that doesn't happen.
Why are we talking here about public servants subsidizing public services?
That's what we're
talking about. Public servants subsidizing public services. It's nonsense. This should be a positive, progressive story. We fought hard to get these onerous car park charges lifted because staff in the health service can't afford them, because patients and patients' visitors can't afford them. And we have finally got to the point where they are being lifted. Now, the $7.5 million involved in it, now that's not peanuts, but at the same time, it can be found if people have the mind to find it. We can get proper car parking spaces into our hospitals. We can build multi-storey car parks that resolve a lot of the parking issues that are ongoing. You have to realise, Stephen, our hospital estate is run down to the point of collapse in some areas. It will take investment to deal with these issues, but it can all be moved on very quickly. And there is the intelligence in the system to
move on even quicker with money, with revenue, couldn't it?
Let me make one other point.
Well, let's let Deirdre respond to you first. No, Patrick, let me. No, you can make the other point within this debate as I'm going to chair it. So Deirdre, respond to you, please.
Well, there are two points. We can talk about hospital workers, but the idea of rewarding the sacrifice of care workers or low-paid workers is actually something that shouldn't be supported, because it normalises the idea that the running of hospital depends on low-paid staff. Staff deserve a fair wage. So I don't think we should be promoting that idea. But secondly, it will not make parking any easier. And in fact, it's likely to have a profoundly negative impact on patients and visitors. Go to the Royal Victoria Hospital, Craigavon Hospital, any day of the week, and there's a queue to get in with drivers circling around, desperately trying to find a space. And as Stephen has said, an FOI recently revealed that staff are parking in 80% of spaces allocated to visitors. Car parking is a limited resource. We have no plans to build new car parks, no plans for additional spaces. So what we have is legislation that will make a bad situation worse. Double yellow lines, people parking on them, ignoring them, people parking in disabled bays, people parking in grass verges, pavements, loading bays. It'll all be fair game for drivers who are simply exasperated. And that will lead to frustrations increasing.
Patrick, your
but
time.
I do think it's really important, those people, to say there's no such thing as free car parking. Okay. These car parks will have to be maintained, and that money is taken out of the hospital budget. So the one thing I agree with Patrick is there's no such thing as something that is free.
Okay.
We will be taking money out of frontline hospital services.
Your turn,
and
Patrick.
Maintaining car parks.
Yeah, I mean, Deirdre has now shifted her focus from the consultants. Let me finish what I'm saying. You're shifting your focus now from the consultants to, it would be an insult to the undeserving poor, it would appear.
No, you're the
low-paid workers in the health service. If you were to take the step of saying, we're not going to take money off you for coming to your work. Well, it's nonsense. It is patent nonsense. What we should have is no low-paid workers in the health service to begin with, and we're in that fight every day to make that happen. I'm sure Deirdre can list what she has done to make that happen, but the unions are in that fight every day to make it happen. And we're not going to have stealth taxes on our members where low-paid workers, they could come to some hospitals and get parked for free, and others, they come and they get charged for it. It's outrageous. It's ridiculous. People are paying through the nose just to come to work, and what it is actually doing is driving people out of the workforce. It's driving good quality staff out of the workforce. You will remember the story last year, Stephen, on this issue of car park charges, where there was a member of staff at Belfast City Hospital was assaulted going back to their car at night, and they couldn't park in the car park because they couldn't afford the car park charges. So they were assaulted going back to their car. Didn't even have the protection to go back at their car in the middle of the night when they were providing emergency services to people. We need to step up to the mark. We need to stop talking about the undeserving poor and these mythical people who are coining it and all the rest of it. We need to deal with the reality. The health service is in crisis. It needs investment. It needs to put money into its staff. It needs to back.
But there are not enough spaces for staff and patients, are there? There are just not enough.
There's not enough spaces. And that's why people like myself, Stephen, have made the arguments that we need to stop this random centralisation of services, put the services back into the Swa Hospital in Enniskillen so people don't have to park in at McElvain, because I'm damn sure there's no other way for them to get from Lisniski to at McElvain
other
than using their cars.
So what do you want to do? So what you want to do is you want to trump the actual outcomes for patients where Bengoa, etc. has recommended, you know, mortality rates how might be improved and how people getting specialist care because of car parking.
Hold on. Who's talking for 1 second about Bengoa? What has Bengoa got
Because when you are advocating...
Bengoa is an argument.
Asked and answered. Are you going to let me answer? When you are talking about dictating which hospitals open where around parking, surely the decisions should be made based on the clinical outcomes for patients rather than the convenience of parking. That's my point.
Stephen, you see, this is exactly the problem that has developed in our hospital estate. It's that sort of narrow-minded, myopic approach to things.
What clinical outcomes for patients?
No, let me finish the sentence. I let you finish. Let me finish the sentence. We need to look at this in a round-out manner. We need to say, we put hospitals where, first of all, they can serve the population. Secondly, where there's clinical excellence. Thirdly, where there's access for patients and where there's access for the public. So we have a holistic view of how we want to develop.
Patrick, it is extraordinary that you are talking about where we would put hospitals in relation to car parking, where we are putting services in relation to the best outcomes, spending our money in the most efficient, most effective manner, and ensuring that patients have access to the very best services that we can provide for them. And that means specialisation and centralisation of services in Northern Ireland. The idea of putting a service in Swa because there's car parking is ludicrous. And actually, your argument makes no sense, because you've already accepted we do not have enough car parking spaces to meet all of the demand. So unless that you're advocating that we spend millions of pounds buying land for car parking, taking it out of the health service budget, and then asking us to manage that system, your whole argument makes absolutely no sense. I am not arguing that the hospital car parking system as it sits is perfect, how it's administered, how it's charged. But the idea of saying that we would make it free in inverted commas, because it isn't free, it'd be coming out of the hospital budget.
I ask you,
Dirty,
would you charge in the hospitals that don't currently charge? Would you introduce car park charges in the hospitals that don't currently charge?
I would suggest, having been in Craigavon yesterday, being a frequent visitor to hospitals, that I would suggest we need to review all of the car parking to ensure that we do the best with what we have. And remember, car parking is a limited resource. We have to ensure that that resource promotes fairness and ensures more possible people have access to it.
Can I ask this question, please? And then, Patrick, I'll let you come back in. Deirdre, if the principle is consistent with your view of charging workers for parking at hospitals, then how come it tends to be the people at the very top of these health systems have free car parking spaces? How come it seems to be that there's not a blanket consistent policy for everybody? That there's no free car parking spaces for heads of organisations, for lead people. And we see that in all different organisations, don't we?
Well, First of all, I would say, I think my previous point was, I'm not saying that the system that we have is perfect. It's far from perfect. There are too many systems. It's unwieldy. And sometimes charges are actually unreasonably high. And we shouldn't have private sector operators charging extortionate rates. That's the first thing to say. Secondly, I agree with you. But Stephen, in all organisations, universities, the BBC, there are reserved car parking spaces for people who are running organisations.
How is that leading by example, though, in terms of the health service?
It absolutely isn't. And I fully agree with you that it should not happen. In University of Ulster, the staff pay for their car parking spaces. All of the staff pay. You can have a permit, but you can't demand a permit because there are only so many. And it's first come, first served basis. And most people make use of public transport. So I would like to see the money going into subsidising buses to those hospitals to ensure that people have access to their services.
I promise you that you come back, Patrick.
Well, I'll deal with the issue of public transport because I think it is an important point. What needs to happen is we need to have a well-run, efficient, cheap or free public transport system to allow workers to go to the work without an additional cost.
But we no one would disagree with that.
Well, you probably would if I give you time. What we have to remember is we do not have that public transport system run to all hours. So the lady who left the Belfast City Hospital and went out to her car in the middle of the night, and it was no fault of hers, she was working nights. You know, hospitals do run at night. So what was she supposed to do? Where was she supposed to get the bus? Where was she supposed to get the train? Shouldn't for one second think that every occupation is the same. It's one thing being a university lecturer. It's a slightly different
thing. Well, there's lots of people working in universities. They're not all lecturers.
It's a slightly different thing to be a porter or to be a nurse who's working a night shift, who's maybe coming out of a very traumatic situation all day and dealing with people who are dying. It's a different thing if you're you're a relative of a patient who's on their last legs and on their way out, and they want to be starting messing around with this. We are in a position where a decision has been taken to remove hospital car park charges. That decision has been taken by Stormont. What Derby is arguing for is to overturn that decision and reintroduce them. What I'm saying to you, Stephen, is these charges have to go. We are not accepting a situation where the visitors are not able to go and see their loved ones. We're not accepting a situation where low-paid, poor workers are being driven to the edge by these sort of approaches. And this attempt to talk about the deserving and undeserving poor and how it would put people off going for higher wages if they were to have no car park charges.
Patrick, the only person that has been talking about the deserving and the undeserving poor is you. What I'm saying in terms of policy, if we have this as a devolved issue, then we should learn from other regions. We are not the only region grappling with this. Scotland, England, Wales have all looked at it, and their evidence has said that this is an error. It will not make parking easier. It makes it more difficult in a different way. And there are far too many people visiting hospitals, working in hospitals to make this a free resource, because the demand would hugely outstrip the supply. And it's a vital point to say
that parking is never free. As soon as you start dealing with the detail of this, your argument begins to collapse around you.
No, it absolutely does not.
So let's start with, would you introduce car park charges across every hospital in Northern Ireland? Patently no, because it would be a nonsense where there's no pressure on the car parking to begin with. Either you think it's about car parking pressure, or you think it's about introducing a tax on low-pay workers. It's one or the other. So if you don't believe you should introduce them in car parks across the whole of the health service across Northern Ireland, it is patently because you have no arguments to stand up around this. Your only real argument here is it might create a wee bit of pressure. It might put low-paid workers off for higher wages. It's nonsense.
I see someone's asking this morning, Patrick, does NHPSA have any free car parking spaces?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, obviously.
Right.
Why, obviously?
Why would we not?
Do you have any?
We don't charge our staff to come to work.
Do you have any charge parking spaces?
No.
So all staff get free?
Yeah.
In NPSA?
Yeah.
Okay. And who pays for that?
NPSA.
Okay. So they subsidise it?
It's not really subsidised. It's a piece of ground that's got tarmac on it and it's laid out in lines.
Okay. Patrick, thank you. Deirdre, thank you. Morning to you. 030-3080-5555. So obviously we've got, 4 minutes left of the programme today. John, morning, John.
Morning, Stephen.
Morning, John. Go ahead.
Stephen, I was just saying about the flag issue for the Northern Ireland team. There's two great riders for Northern Ireland.
This is back to Ulster Banner.
Yes. There's Jonathan Ray. Now, I know it's motorcycling, but it's to do with the Ulster Banner too. Jonathan Ray has the Ulster flag stitched into his leathers. And there's another rider from Northern Ireland, Eugene Laverty. When they win races, Jonathan Ray will fly the Ulster Banner. And when Eugene Laverty wins a race, he'll fly the tricolour. So why not, when the athletes go to the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, go as Team NI and then let the athletes choose what flag they want to wrap around them?
Okay. So freedom for athletes to choose, no codes, whatever they want to choose. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. You know, if it's a young Protestant boxer that wins and he wants to wrap the Ulster flag around him, go ahead, do it. And same if it was a young nationalist fella, put a tricolour around himself. Just go as Team NI and let the athletes choose what flags they want to wrap themselves in.
John, thank you. Albert in Belfast. Morning, Albert.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, just to sum that the chair of the committee said yesterday when he was asked, was that his own opinion? And he said, yes, that the flag should be changed. And you said this morning that there was others complaining. I'd like to know who them others are. Is it the committee or is it the athletes are complaining? And basically,
what do you mean you'd like to know who they are? Are you telling me in Northern Ireland, with the difference in the division of opinion around flags, which you know full well, Albert, there is, are you trying to tell me that you think everybody is united behind the union banner at sport? Like, come on! Why do you wind me up like this?
What I'm saying this morning is a majority of the committee again about changing the flag. Is a majority of the athletes?
It is the position. It is the position is it of the Commonwealth Games.
You were the one that said this morning. I'm trying to answer it. There was other ones that basically complained.
So let me know who's
complaining. That could be fantasy. So you know, right? What you're putting out? Have you information that somebody else?
What I've said is this. First of all, it's the position of the Commonwealth Games. NI, that people are not comfortable. Some people are not comfortable under the Ulster banner. The other question you asked is yes, and the answer is yes. It is the position of Commonwealth Games NI that the executive should design a new flag, a new banner, Albert. That's what they're saying.
Well, tell me this: why is this? Was there not when the last Commonwealth Games basically was in Glasgow, wherever it was? Was there a complaint then? Because there was no complaints then. After, I never heard of any complaints until now. But another thing is, which I don't agree with,
yes,
is that some of the competitors can go and represent Southern Ireland in the Olympics,
yes,
and then they come because they live in Northern Ireland, then they can represent.
Albert, thank you. You're our last call of the day, mister. Thanks, everyone. I'm exhausted. See you in the morning when we start at 9 o'clock. Have a good day.
Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @Stephen Nolan.